Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. We prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, with today's guest.
Today on Think About It, we're welcoming John Holmes, who has served as Associate Vice President of Facilities and Campus Operations at Houston Baptist University since 2014. John oversees the facilities and many auxiliary services of the university, including public safety, the police department, and he's an adjunct instructor in the Archie W. Dunham College of Business. He's the Deputy Title IX Coordinator and is a director of the Southwest Management District Board. Now, John, you're pursuing a doctorate and in business administration. Tell us about the institution where you're doing that through.
So when I was searching for a program that allowed for a working adult to be in the program and do largely online, the only AACSB accredited program I could find was the Grenoble School of Management in Grenoble, France, which sounds much more exotic than it is. It's the entire program is done in English, but we've gone to France once and we get together every quarter, though now, of course, we're doing it online. But yeah, I'm finishing up my first year of what I assume will be a 25-year project and doing the best I can with all the other challenges. So.
Well, I can imagine the challenges. I did my doctorate, and let me tell you, that's no small feat. So where is that city located in France?
It's they love to call it the capital of the Alps. So it's in the French Alps. Skiing is a really big deal. It's the fourth largest city in France. So I flew into Paris and took the train down there last Thanksgiving. I spent Thanksgiving week there, and it's gorgeous. As you can imagine, the classroom that we had our sessions in is on the ninth floor of this building, and the windows overlook the French Alps. Mm-hmm. And as a facilities guy, I was a little jealous about the amenities they could offer their students.
Well, you know, there's so many things I admire about you, John. I like the way that you face challenges. I like your leadership that exudes from you. And we both share a common passion of global travel. We'll have to take a trip together. You probably have a big time together. But, you know, let's talk for what the elephant in the room, the challenging first, the 2020 COVID year. I mean, tell us how you've navigated and all the unique things. I was particularly interested in extra safety measures that have been installed at HBU. Right. Tell us all about it.
So, you know, the very early on, before the university had even made a decision to move to remote instruction back in November, Dr. Sloan, you know, got very ahead of the game and called together a group of folks in the Husky Strong Task Force, and I'm privileged to both be on that task force and then lead one of the safety subcommittee groups. And we started to look at all of the information that was coming in and trying to parse, you know, the sort of the practical and what seemed to be science-based from what we really needed to do here at the university. The mandate was very clear that we desired to reopen in the fall for class in some form or fashion if we could do it safely. And that was the sort of the guiding principle throughout the entire summer. We never approached this as if we weren't going to open. And I feel as though it's I was talking to someone earlier today, you know, there's hundreds, 600-700 universities in the country. Most of us who opened ended up in very similar places. We have, designed hybrid attendance requirements and allowed students to go remote that want to and faculty that need to. And we've done all those things. And we've done the things that most everyone else has done as well, like social distancing the classes, requiring masking on campus, having heightened sanitation and high touch cleaning. You know, two of the things that we did though that I think set us apart from organizations, one of them is, during the summer, I think everybody recalls, there was a lot of anxiety about finding enough cleaning products. You know, we all sort of need to be cleaning our environment right now. You can't just trust the custodians are going to be able to do it for you. And there was a lot of expressed anxiety from people about both as a student coming back or parents with their kids, and then our faculty and staff, about us just having enough for them to be able to help out. So we went ahead and installed, it's actually our second version of this machine, but it's an electrostatic cleaning agent generator. So it's a product that basically combines electricity, salt, and tap water, and creates a solution that we can use in one format for general purpose cleaning and in the other format for sanitizing. We've been using this product, like I said, or a similar version of this, for a few years here on campus, which allowed us to move away from, you know, in the industry, you know, there was this big push to move to green cleaning, you know, with chemicals that were safe. In our case, we moved to what people call blue cleaning, which is there is no chemical. So there's zero, you know, odors to it. It's 100% safe. There's no byproduct. There's no packaging because we make it here on campus. So, you know, it was really as environmentally friendly as we could make it. But it worked out perfectly for us because the university has an unlimited supply, you know, of that chemical on campus. So we ordered 900 empty bottles and have filled them up with sanitizing and cleaning solution. And they are basically spread across the campus. And as people need them to be replaced, we're able to just hand them another bottle. No drama about trying to find Lysol wipes somewhere or anything like that. So I think that's a peace of mind move. But the thing that we did that's new that I really think is a differentiator is I think, you know, most people have seen video or maybe they've experienced themselves of what's called an aqueous hydrogen peroxide disinfecting process. And that's when someone's all garbed up in a respirator and gear, and they're fogging an area after maybe a service has been held for a church or something like that. And those systems use a 7 parts per million hydrogen peroxide solution that's super effective, you know, at killing everything that vapor touches. But it's also pretty dangerous, so everyone's got to be out of the area. You have to wait for the hydrogen peroxide to dissipate before it's safe for people to come back in. It's expensive, you know, so there's a lot of challenges to it. What HBU did is we went ahead and installed what are called non-aqueous gaseous hydrogen peroxide systems that operate continuously. So this isn't something we do a few times a day where we go around and use the systems. These systems are running, we're installed 24 hours a day, which means the area is constantly being disinfected. They produce hydrogen peroxide at 0.02 parts per million, which is 1/50th of the OSHA dose, and it's perfectly safe for people to breathe it in and things like that. This is another product that's existed for a long time. For about 18 years, it's been out in the marketplace. It's also fairly expensive to install, and mostly has been in food production facilities, an area where there's been problems with mold and things like that. But obviously, in these challenging times, that additional safety factor is really important to us. So the university has installed it. You can either install it permanently in the HVAC system, and then they make plug-in systems as well. And we've installed in the HVAC systems all of the dining areas of the university, the library study area, the learning commons, and then the science building, the entire building, all the laboratories and classrooms and offices as well. And then throughout the campus, in about 95% of the classrooms, there's now a plug-in unit as well, which means in addition to masking, in addition to cleaning, in addition to public distancing, we have what we think is an extra layer of protection that very little, you know, other organizations have been able to make that investment. Oklahoma University's done something similar in some of their dorms. There's a couple of other places that have done one-offs, but I think this is going to be something in the coming years that's going to be very common for people to look at. It's not a bad cost. For an installation in a house, for example, and I know a lot of people put those UVC lights in their homes. The problem with the commercial installation is the air is only sanitized when it's drawn back into the system and passed through the UVC light, and all of the emerging studies suggest that just doesn't happen fast enough. So with the product that we're using, the air itself is sanitized, and hydrogen peroxide naturally attacks any water-based molecule that's floating in the air. It just runs right to it like a magnet. So we think this is a great step in the right direction for creating as safe as environment as we possibly can. And then the rest of the summer has really been about education, putting people in a position where we were as transparent as we could be. We developed a couple of in-house training programs that I narrated, tried to mix a little humor in with some scary information and help people get through their anxiety about what was going on, and then just be steady. You know, the theme of this whole period is, you know, we always joked about, you know, it's a very fluid, environment because things keep changing. But I think the real theme is about grace. You know, everybody is dealing with this situation in the way that works for them. Folks are all over the place. There's whatever politics have crept into these conversations and anxieties about that. But I really feel like every time I approach a question, even if it's the 35th time I've answered that question, sometimes in the same day, you have to give that person grace, and say, okay, let's understand what you're worried about and talk through that. And maybe I can help. And sometimes it might take a couple of times before we get to that place. But I think that behavior across campus between faculty and staff and between students and themselves, and then, across the two organizations, I think that's really what's going to make the campus distinct, and put us in a position to be successful this fall.
Well, when I think about this fall, we had a campaign and we're still pushing it. Just can't wait for fall 2020. And the numbers are strong. The spirit has been incredibly good. Needless to say, HVU is a very resilient organization. I think it's in our DNA. We go through different things, Hurricane Harvey, whatever. But this, I've got to really commend you, because I think I've listened to you on countless Zooms, and you've just been a good voice of reason, and so I appreciate you for that. But how, as you read the campus, because you know it probably better than anybody, how do you feel like everything's going? Talk to that parent or grandparent out there that may have a son or daughter, grandson or granddaughter at HBU. Allay their fears and let them know your perspective.
Sure. I will say it's been a very uneventful, which is surprising, week or so, right? We had a little bit of the hiccup that the hurricane, caused, but, we have a little over 800 residential students on campus. Our capacity is just over, 1,000. So 800, given the conditions that we're in, is a significant number, and certainly much better in terms of percentages from any of our peer institutions. So those students taking all of this seriously is critical to the success of this whole process, and they're remarkable. The very rare instances I have to tap someone on the shoulder and make mention about putting masks back up or something like that, this always comes down to they were eating a sandwich at Chick-fil-A and they forgot to put their mask back on when they were done or something like that. There is a distinct difference between our students and a lot of the situations you see happening on other college campuses. Some of that's about the environment around us, right? There's a truth that I do not have Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and all of its open, unmasked bars surrounding my campus. So it's a very different situation here in Houston. But it's also all credit to the student population and what we've crafted here at the university. Our students understand their role in this being successful. And the kids that I've talked to and the time that I've spent, we've visited, this has been such a huge change that them having problems would be normal. And truthfully, they have the least problems. The students seem to be figuring this out. We completely redid the way the bookstore, works for safety. We've changed virtually every aspect of what they are doing here on campus. And for the most part, they're just, tell me what I need to do. Thanks for giving me the information. And off they go to do it, And that's, that's very affirming of the environment that we try to create here at the environment, at the university. And I think underscores our beliefs about the fact that we are distinct. So it's been great. Frankly, it's been really good. And that's not going to say that we aren't going to have hiccups and stumbles, because we have hiccups and stumbles. But I also think that everybody will pull together and deal with it. And, first big challenge, this weekend we're sending the football team up to North Texas for their, one of their three games that they're going to do this year. There's There's only one athletic event on campus this entire fall, and that's a women's soccer game this Sunday. But we have spent hours and hours and hours doing everything we can to make those events as safe as we possibly can, to celebrate those moments for those students, because it's very important to them, right? They're the ones that are sort of being asked to accept that their experience here is going to be less than what they had hoped it to be. And I think that the dividends from that investment is showing itself.
Now, John, let me also, for those who don't have the opportunity to do the Safe College videos, and maybe they haven't been on a faculty Zoom, just give everybody an idea of how the classrooms have been constructed and how the teachers are communicating, the usage of masks, you know, just the normal protocol, shall we say, during the pandemic that obviously will change when it's over.
Sure. So obviously, the first question that has to be answered for any what we call an H campus or a class that's meant to be held here on campus is to make sure that the faculty member feels safe being here. There is a percentage of faculty who have pre-existing health conditions and other issues, and they may choose that they would like to teach that class remotely, and we've given them the option to do that. But I will say that that's very rare. By comparison to, I have friends who have kids at big state colleges, and they may have one hybrid class and four online classes. You know, here it's the reverse. You know, there's a real strength in being a smaller university. It's hard to take an Econ 101 class with 300 people in it and split it in half and pretend like 150 people in a room is safe, right? So, our average class size is between 21 and 23 students. We have some classes that are outliers, but generally that's where they are. So after you've asked the faculty about their feeling safe, then we ask the students. So all the H campus classes, except for a very limited number of nursing classes that are tied to their accreditation, the students are allowed to remote for that entire class if that's what they choose to do. So that further reduces the number of students that would potentially be in that class. And then what we've done is we've moved to what we're calling a hybrid model. So classes meet, as I think most folks know, the undergraduate classes on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, or Tuesdays and Thursdays. The students are only expected to be in class, they're assigned to a cohort, one of those 2 days. The Friday classes are 100% online. They're gonna be usually doing activities and things like that. But the professors and faculty spent all summer transitioning to new technology, new software, we put new hardware in the classrooms, and they're recording every single class they do so that they're able to take that class and the half that was on, let's say the A cohort, so they were there on Monday, the students that are gonna come on Wednesday watch that recording of that class instead of actually being there. And then on Wednesday, they flip-flop. So that way, you know, we took a class that was already small because HBU's classes are generally small. We allowed some number of students to remote out and reduce that number even more, and then we split that number in half. By doing that, no classroom can ever have even approaching 50% of the students in the room, because mathematically it just doesn't get back to that number again. So in doing so, we've got the rooms really, you know, as small as they can be, the kids spread out as far as they can. The students have to be masked the entire time that they're in the classroom, no food or drink. Exceptions like, oh, I'm just sipping this soda, so I'm gonna take my mask off. So none of that. And the faculty are at the front of the room. We double distance the faculty from the students. So they're on average about 12 feet away from the first group of students that would be sitting there in the room. And we're doing the best we can with keeping everybody safe. So, you know, that, and then, like I said, there's a simmer unit that's in the room. It's typically double sized for the room. So it's a 2,000 square foot unit that's running in a 900 square foot classroom throughout most of the campus, about 80% of it. And we think all of that comes together to create a safe environment as we can. But then also what I'm hearing from the students is that this, you know, we were a little flat footed, I think, like everybody else in the spring when we made this transition. Yeah. This fall, your class is the same. It doesn't matter if it's a class in math or if it's a class in history. Those professors are using the same software. They have the same expectations. The attendance works the same way. And I think that consistency and knowing the expectations really lends itself to success. So I hear nothing but good things from the kids. The We had a couple of first week hiccups like you would expect anytime we start using new stuff, but everything seems to be going well. And a byproduct of that is when we went remote for the hurricane, it was seamless. Like everybody knew exactly what to do. They, you know, transition to that. It's not like in the K-12s where when they closed for the hurricanes, they were closed for those days. For us, we stayed open. They had class just like they would have class, you know, so it worked out really well. There's a resilience to the model now. That I think that you can see those investments bearing fruit. So,
you know, I'm interested that we know COVID's going to come and go. A vaccine eventually will be here, and you know, there'll be a day that, you know, we're not even thinking about this. But from your perspective, what will be some of the takeaways that you'll say, you know, as bad as that was, we've been advantaged, you know, we in these certain areas. Have you had time to think about how this is, I mean, obviously that adaptability you just spoke about is probably priceless, particularly in an academic environment. But what are some of the positive takeaways that you see coming out of COVID 6 months, a year, 18 months from now?
Well, I think, you know, there's at the meta level in my field, right, in facilities, there's been a very strong conversation about the way that the buildings are set up from an air conditioning standpoint, and a reliance on energy savings has led to buildings that are very prone to being sick, you know, a sick building syndrome. Yeah. And I think that you're going to see a lot of new construction in particularly the K-12 world that's going to be much more mindful of that. The base recommendations that ASHRAE put out for how you handle outside air and things like that are impossible to achieve in humid climates. It can't be done without very different systems than what we typically install. So Florida and Houston and other places, we just have to look at building design a little bit different about how we handle it and things like that. I think that the other, you know, areas come down to these ideas of what constitutes, you know, a classroom, you know, situation. Like how does education always have to be synchronous? Just because it's residential, is it possible to be doing more asynchronous instruction, you know, at the residential level? We've, you know, for HBU, this has been a little bit of a journey over the last 5 years with the Pinky Pampel, you know, division coming online and us embracing more online experience. But there's a difference between a remote class, you know, and an online class and a in-person class. But I think that there's some value here to seeing how those modalities and the pedagogy can be woven together to be able to come up with more creative experiences for the students. And then the last piece is 800 plus students showing up on campus in the middle of this just underlines that residential education is important to a lot of people, right? You know, and I think that there's an awful lot of pundits running around out there pointing their finger and saying these kids are going to be happy sitting in front of their computer at home, you know, watching, you know, videos of classes. I don't think that's true.
No.
You know, right. And I think that if that's true, you know, in that residential is important, then you have to sort of double down on your efforts about that. What is it about coming here and being on campus to create that residential experience? What can we do to continue to enrich that for the students? I'm always going to be the guy, because I'm the facilities guy, who's going to argue about the amenities and wanting to make that experience a certain way. But I think it's just sort of underlined by what you see in all of the research that they want to come here. They want to know where they're going to hang out with their friends, where they're going to play, where they're going to study, where they're going to, you know, and when I, you know, 150 years ago, when I was doing tours for my college, you know, you used to stop in front of the library and talk about how many volumes the library had. And, you know, we subscribed to umpty, you know, journals and all that kind of stuff. That's not where they are anymore. You know, and I think that this makes everybody reposition themselves to be very aware of that, because the residential population is critical to every bricks and mortar university out there. And by creating the right kind of amenities, which I think we've done a lot of, and the right kind of campus environment, which we've done an awesome amount of, you get the results that we do. And the schools that didn't, I think that they're getting a little bit of a wake-up call about some things that they need to be taking a look at.
Totally agree. You know, one of the things I really appreciate as well, and we could talk for hours, but about so many things, but the Title IX and the training that's gone on, you know, in a Harvey Weinstein world, we know that, you know, and we learned that, I learned this from Billy Graham way back in 1986. Billy had 8,000 of us in Amsterdam for 10 days. And, you know, Billy and Cliff set such high standards for moral conduct. And you know, so, but going back to the training here at HBU, every faculty member learns about the proper protocol to respect the opposite sex. And that's essential. I mean, it's so important, but you guys, and really, you know, when I say you guys, it's us guys. I mean, HBU takes it seriously, and as do many institutions, but in a unique way. Dr. Sloan has led out, and with all the team, talk about the training that goes in to make certain that we just have great Christian etiquette and behavior on our campus.
Sure. So, you know, Title IX is a bit of a call to action that came out of some changes that happened during the Obama administration, that was driven by, frankly, some situations where universities didn't do what they probably should have done without being prompted to. And there's a lot of things that have gone on over the years since that Dear Colleague letter was issued. And there are requirements that the university must follow, and there's things that the state of Texas legislature actually have placed upon this school. The university does everything that we're required to do, right? So every staff member of the university is considered a responsible employee, which is consistent with the guidance from the state of Texas. We make everybody who works here at the school, who a student could reasonably approach with a problem, understand what the rules and their responsibilities are and the process that we follow. And that includes the changes that just went into effect on August 14th, right? Because it's one of those models that's constantly evolving, and there's lots of conversations about it. But I think that your bigger point and the more important point is the conversation that the Title IX team, and we're led by Sandy Mooney. So there are not a whole lot of CFOs, COOs of universities that run the Title IX program. Usually that's somebody else down deeper into the organization that's doing that. But Dr. Sloan's commitment to how seriously the school takes this is born out of the fact that he has senior staff members that are involved in this process. And the expectation is that we go beyond just what the law requires to find a restorative way to be able to keep everybody safe, to put everybody in a position where their concerns are heard, that we have an extremely even-handed process. That due process is followed very scrupulously because, you know, again, there's lots of situations where emotions can push you one way or another. And until an investigation is complete, it's hard to know exactly, you know, what was going on. But the school takes this very seriously. And there's a tremendous amount of time that's invested between the Title IX trainings, the Cleary trainings, the violence against women trainings and things like that. All of the staff and faculty watched about 5.5 hours worth of trainings this spring, you know, to get, you know, refreshed and up to date and things like that. And then the university, you know, every school is required again by law to have all students who are new to the university, so it's not just freshmen, watch some trainings as well on bystander intervention and the Clery Act and Title IX and their rights and responsibilities. But HBU goes that next step, which is in the FYS, the first year seminar class. All freshmen that come to the university that take FYS not only watch those videos, but then spend time talking about, all right, well, now we told you the law, but let's talk about the morals behind it. Where are the biblical teachings on this? Do you know, what are the university's expectations about how you comport yourself here at the university and beyond? Do you know the whys and what fors and the ethics behind everything? It is so much more important to spend time on, and the school invests a significant effort in those areas, and for whatever it's worth, the outcome of that is we see far less cases on campus than the peer institutions in the city do. You know, we have to publish our Cleary report every October 1st. It was delayed this year until December because of COVID, but October 1st, every university in the country that gets federal financial aid, which is like Bob's Barbershop all the way up to Harvard, has to publish a 3-year retrospective of all of their Cleary-related incidents on campus and all their disciplinary referrals. And I'm more than happy for anybody to open up our report and see the outcomes, you know, as they're in there, and the way that the university takes that action on things. And then, you know, we've had a serious incident on campus. And the thing that was unusual about us is we were able to take charges to the district attorney's office. You know, no other school in town has taken things that seriously.
Yeah.
So we want people to understand if something untoward happens, that where the appropriate response is to involve the police, and everybody involved thinks that that's what we should do. You know, the university is not shy about that. It's very important to be mindful of everybody's rights and responsibilities, but also I think sometimes the right thing is just the right thing, and you've got to do that. So I'm very proud. That's hard work. Those are not easy conversations for anybody who's on the team to have, but I think it's some of the most important stuff that we do here at the school.
Totally agree, John. And, you know, prospective student, parent, grandparent, those of you checking out HBU, you can see why HBU should be your school of choice. In 140 podcasts that I've done, I've heard the word family so many times from faculty and students. I feel like it's a family. And in a world where you don't connect, or you'd like to connect with somebody who cares, that's a beautiful alternative for higher ed, and HBU fulfills that. Safety, protocols, respecting people. You can see from John Holmes' remarks today just how seriously that's taken, along with the rigor to provide academic excellence. You don't just have a piece of paper to stick in a frame, but a changed life, and you learn something. Learn something to be a transformation agent in this world. John, I just am so grateful to you and to your gift to HBU and to our team. And we're thankful for all the extra effort you have put in during this challenging time. I know there's been a lot of late hours, early mornings, et cetera. I give the copies of the emails like others on the executive council do at different hours of the day and night. And often you're in there with us. And so we just want you to know how important you are and how grateful we are to you. And
as you were saying, yesterday was my 6-year anniversary with the university, and it frankly, it blinked by. This is the blessing of diverse responsibilities is mine every day. And I feel very lucky to have it.
Well, we're grateful and we're blessed to have you. Thank you, John, so much for joining us today about Think About It. If people want more information about the police department or about any of these informations, where would you send them?
So the university website has pages for police and that Cleary report that I mentioned and things like that. But, you know, it's also very easy. My email is just jholmes@hbu.edu. You know, as you joked, I'm pretty quick to respond to email for the most part. And if I don't know the information, which happens, I'll find the right person for any questions people have.
Very good. Grateful to you, John. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.